Welcome back for another episode of the Skits and Giggles podcast. I am Pascal, and I'm joined by my co-host Bryson. Bryson, how's it going tonight, buddy?
I'm doing good, Pascal. Welcome back, Skigglers. On this podcast, we like to talk about all the little stories of mountain biking in Switzerland, but you know, we really haven't determined what is a mountain bike.
What is a mountain bike? Well, I guess for me, it's pretty simple. It's a bike that is made for the mountains. So it's robust enough that it survives my kind of riding in the mountains, in the alpine, technical trails, big rocks, roots, all that sort of stuff. It has tires that give me grip. It's, as I said, robust enough that it survives that, but it's light enough that I can schlep it around if at some stage also want to explore the higher peaks in the mountains. And apart from that, it has two wheels, a saddle, handlebar of some sort, maybe some suspension, and that's about it. I mean, that's how I started. How about you, Bryson?
Well, I really had the idea back in Canada what a mountain bike was, and it was like in the form of a trail bike, let's say. So whether it's a hardtail or a full suspension bike, it didn't matter. But now that I'm in Switzerland, I notice a lot of people climbing mountains on road bikes, let's say. And in a way, they're mountain bikes. They're just getting you up the mountain in a different way, not on a trail per se, but on another path. So maybe my conception of a mountain bike has changed to include all forms of bicycle transportation that take you up a mountain. I'm not sure yet. But you know what we can do? We can dive into the topic with Jan tonight.
That's right. We had our friend Jan Favre on the podcast tonight to discuss all things hardtail, single speed, bike packing, geometry, tires, suspension, marketing faffs, and all these kind of fun things. And we dive deep into those topics. But before we jump in, let's just say a few words about our social and where you guys can find more information about the Skits and Giggles podcast. We are currently most active on our Instagram, where you can find our account under the handle Skits and Giggles, and you can skid right into our DMs. You can find our website with all the relevant links and info under the URL skitsandgiggles.com. Also, if you guys like what we're doing and want to know what's up, just give us a follow on Spotify. Hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to great podcasts. Finally, sharing our episodes on your social or a heartfelt 5-star rating on your favorite platform goes a long way in helping us reach more people like you. With all of that out of the way, let's get back to Jan and all things fun about mountain biking. Catch you after the show. With the virtual handshakes out of the way, I think we get started. We welcome Jan Favre. Welcome to the Skits and Giggles podcast. How's it going tonight?
Well, it's good. Bit tired from work, but stoked to be here.
Nice one. Bryson, how's it going?
All right, Pascal. And you?
Yeah, splendid. Splendid. I think for a little bit of context for today's conversation, we want to set the stage a little bit. So a couple of months ago, we did a little recording about our hardtails and racing hardtails and why we ride hardtails with our friend Louisa. We discussed about all the different concepts, like what is the benefit, what are the challenges, especially with racing, why would you ride one in the first place? And one of the coolest messages we got on the back of that one came from Jan that we have as a guest today. And we thought it would be cool to go a bit more in depth about his reply to the hardtail episode. So do you want to give us a little summary of what your comments were on the back of that episode?
As far as I remember, it was about 50% rant with a little bit of truth in it, but I felt very triggered as a hardtail rider. I think the title of it was Hardtails and Other Stupid Ideas. I thought building up a hardtail again was the best idea I had in the last few years. So I exaggerated some of the marketing things that you hear about full suspension bikes and why they are so good, and tried to counter all of them. Of course, it's a bit more complicated than that, and I think that's why we're here.
There you go. So I guess to set the stage in terms of the spectrum of hardtails, there is obviously, you know, the classic hardtail, hardcore hardtail, steel frame, lots of suspension. There is the cross-country hardtails. There's all different kinds. Where on that spectrum would you put yourself?
Kind of on both ends of the extremes. Like, it's a single speed downhill hardtail. So you got 160 mil fork in it. I've already thought about putting a Dorado on it or something like that because it feels so stable. But I'm broke, so I didn't. And the single speed thing is pretty much the other extreme. Most people that ride single speed have no suspension. So I kind of tried something stupid and I'm surprised that it works.
Very good. But the fun things, I have your response in my notes here in front of me, and I want to pick out some of the things that you mentioned. One thing you mentioned is, of course, the geometry, and that that geometry is not stable with full suspension bikes. Obviously, things change a little bit as you go through the travel. Why do you think there is such a misunderstanding of why, of the suspension, of the dynamic of the suspension, and of course, as an extension then, of the geometry?
I think one of the reasons is because we learned that more is always better. I do myself, as I said, I wanted to put a Dorado on a hardtail, which is downright stupid. The reasons were more geometry wise, but more on that later. I think it's not only the number of travel, it's also the quality of travel and things like that are really important. And my main point is, like, I've got like 15 years of experience as a bike mechanic now. Sometimes the most complicated, most advanced suspension that you can buy might not be the best suited for everyone. So it gets, at some point, it gets really complicated to kind of get the maximum out of it, which then leads me to think that you're just wasting money. So that's one of my key points, really. I think that if you buy a full suspension bike with all the knobs you can turn and all the adjustments in the world, it means that you have to invest not only money, but also time to get it going. Other than that, it's just, a waste. Doesn't mean it can't be better, but it probably isn't if you don't put in the time.
Oh, for sure. 100% agree. And I thought it was an interesting counterpoint to, what we discussed at the time. And of course, suspension, if you only have front suspension, that, my personal view is that if you only have front suspension, that of course it needs to be much better, much more balanced, much more accommodating, and you need to spend much more time on just figuring that piece out. And of course, then if you have rear suspension too, then there's the interaction between front and back, the balance between the two, how does it change, how your positioning of the bike, the balance of the bike overall, and a balance of grip actually is also quite an important one.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting concept, I think, for people to say, well, I'd rather spend more money on a good suspension fork and a hardtail than to spend the same amount of money for a middle of the road full suspension bike. And I think that is a quite provocative. And I would also love to hear Bryson's opinion on this.
Yeah, Jan, very good point. I'm, as a hardtail rider as well, I see all the validity there. But I want to bring a counterpoint in here. Have you, or when was the last time you rode a full suspension bike that wasn't set up for you or was poorly set up? And how would you rate that against riding your, like your hardtail that you have now, like, that you've, that you're used to riding?
I've been riding full suspension bikes, like most of the time. I always also had a hardtail, or most of the time also had a hardtail. So, well, last time I rode full suspension bike was 2 years ago, which was my 130 mil trail bike. I think Pascal has seen it when we were racing in Davos. I hope it was set up pretty well, but I kept changing. Like as soon as I changed, did a little change on the back, I also had to adjust something in the front, and like just the opportunities to keep on tuning were there, so I did. So probably the riding was better, but it was also quite stressful. So I was always tinkering and trying to get, I mean, there's so many ways you can set up a bike. It can be soft and fast, or it can be stiff and slow, and you'll have the same dynamic ride height, but you're completely different setups. So, and depending on the weather, you could change it every day. So that got me completely stressed out, because I'm trying to achieve the maximum I can get out of my bikes. And it left me completely stressed at some point. Like I'm now enjoying the simplicity of my bike, because it won't be perfect after all. Like it won't be the fastest bike on the hill I could ride. Of course, on some trails on the full suspension bike, I'm going to be faster. So the point about hardtail is not the suspension. It's the geometry, and that is much, much easier to keep within a certain range. So all my setup on the hardtail is to prevent geometry. That's way simpler than on a full suspension bike, because I just couldn't get it right. If it was softer, it was moving too much. If it was stiffer, I felt like, why am I riding a full suspension bike? I'm not even using the travel. Yeah, so it was, it kept going back and forth. So that was my personal reason to try out something else.
I also went back to a hardtail. Actually, I flipped back and forth between full suspension bikes and hardtails over the years, and I adore hardtails. It's just a simple fact. You can just ride them. Like you said, you don't have to worry about all these things. And at one point, it just brings you a little bit closer, because you're not worried about having this optimal setup.
Yeah,
you have a bike and it's set up, and it's like, okay, you have a front adjuster, maybe one or two tire pressures like every other bicycle. But basically, when you remove all of those things, maybe they're distractions, you know, maybe they are limiting yourself from achieving a performance. You can then focus on the task at hand, which is rallying the trail, right? And I think a lot of people jump off full suspension bikes and go to hardtails for this simple fact.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, there's always like the aesthetic and the feeling, but where do you fall in line with that comment?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's what happened to me. Like on my, especially now with making it single speed, which is another quirky thing to do, but it just means that after a ride in the mud, I just basically clean my chain and extensions, and that's it. I was even thinking about, having no suspension at all, but I couldn't find a suspension corrected fork that would let me ride with a 63 head angle. So that's the main reason I'm running front suspension. And if you have one, it has to be good. Other than that, I would be annoyed. So
definitely. Yeah, in some ways, I'm like one step ahead of you. So I just switched to a rigid fork.
Nice.
I found the Salsa Firestarter. It's suspension corrected for 120 mil 29er. So it's not a lot. So it's basically XC Geo, because it's impossible to find a 160 millimeter suspension corrected rigid fork. It's just, no one's doing it.
Why? But I can't imagine No one wants it now, of course. It's a stupid thing, but yeah.
Well, actually, we might have to send a message over to Andrew Major over at NSMB, because he's also a now rigid mountain bike evangelist, and you know, he's kind of leading the march in some ways. But anyways, what I found was that I really did still enjoy riding that bicycle a lot, because now I could just concentrate on what I was doing. Like you said, you get back, you can just spray your bike off and there's minimal care. And I've also gone single speed since maybe, I don't know, 2010 or so. Nice. So I'm definitely in the same camp where I understand like zero maintenance makes for a lot more riding than wrenching. And yeah, I'm happy with that. I urge you to give it a shot, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I have to, because the one thing that steals me a day of riding is doing the suspension service. If I say a day of riding, usually I got like 2 or 3 hour window to ride. So if I rebuilt my fork, that window's pretty much gone. So I've worked at Fox, so I know how to do it. But if you try and do it properly, it's still more than an hour. So yeah, it's still a few days a year that I lose because of the fork. So yeah, I want to try it, definitely. It's just I can't, like, I also ride that one bike in the bike park, and I don't want to ride a cross-country head angle through berms. Like, it's just I'm not strong enough, I guess.
And this is another major point, because I have a custom Geo hardtail, so it's actually got an extra slack head angle. But you're riding a production model, yeah. So you probably it's corrected for, let's say, a 140 to 160 fork, probably, right? Maybe you want to give the listeners just a rundown overall on your spec so that they understand the context of that.
Yeah. So everyone that knows me pretty much knows that I'm a big fan of Kotick bikes. One of the reasons is that I have similar discussions I had with you, I had with Sai through emails. It started when I asked him what bike to buy, and I think we've written a couple of pages since then. We could probably print the book soon. But it's one of the reasons that got me super hooked on that brand. I mean, I pay full price, and but I'm still like, I'm very glad to put it out there. It's my fourth Kotick bike now. So I've started with the Beefy 27 hardtail. I was so convinced that I bought the Rocket, the 160 mil enduro bike, which was my kind of geometron kind of experiment bike. Like, it was already it would already arrive with a very slack head angle, and I put in an angle set and a 29er front wheel, and bought it like two sizes too big, and just wanted to see if it rides. It did, but my back started to hurt, so I went back to the one smaller Flare Max that Pascal has seen me ride on. That was pretty much perfect. I loved it so much. But then Corona came along and I was bored, so I sold it and built up the Beefy Max. So I bought a frame, medium size, 450 reach. I'm 173, so not too long, but for me, it's pretty much my sweet spot. It's 29er frame. I deliberately bought the Hope single speed hubs just to make sure I couldn't draw back. Full commitment. Lacy DT Swiss rims, put on MIDI tires. I'm now having Onza Porcupine RC tires, like the DH tires on it, just because that was the weak spot. I started with light tires and it was unrideable. I lost the tire mid-turn because of the stiffness of the rear, and just went through tires. Running XTR cranks, and I think the most important thing is Fox 36 factory that I keep rebuilding and trying to get everything out of it I can, because it seems like I'm just too weak. My hands are really paying the price for the hardtail. So I try to get everything out of that fork. But I think that's the thing that stands out. All the pieces together were probably the same price as the fork.
And you're running that fork at which travel?
160. You know, like I started first, I had a pike with 140 mil. And then I took the bike to the bike parks, and the pike just couldn't handle the head angle and the big jumps. It was just feeling like it was moving back and forth instead of up and down. Like when you were running into a turn with all those braking bumps, you could see it in the slow-mo videos. It just, at some point, it kind of stopped working. It was good as soon as you weren't in the bike park. I had to upgrade that. That's the only thing I've changed, really.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that with the pike. I do have a pike on one of my other bikes, and I can see that's probably not quite made for bike parks. One interesting thing I find is, of course, we always talk about, you know, we said geometry and the turns and being stable and all these kind of things. And I guess also before we started recording, actually, so far we only talked about head tube angle and it needs to be slack, and we talked about reach, and this is, you know, your sweet spot. But we haven't talked about C-tube angles. And yeah. I know that Bryson also feels pretty passionately about C-tube angles. And actually, that's the one thing, I was close to buying a Beefy Max, by the way, as well. But the interesting thing, the one thing that I, for the intention that I didn't quite like compared to my current bike, which is a Moxie, is the C-tube angle, which is quite a bit slacker than some of the, let's say, more aggressive, hardcore hardtails.
Yeah.
What is your take on C-tube angles? Because I know you run your saddle quite far slammed forward, which suggests to me you're not quite the big fan of 74-degree head and C-tube angle, sorry.
I'm in a lucky position to have very short legs. So I'm a dachshund somehow. got very, very long torso and arms. Yeah, I slide my saddle all the way forward, but it's also because I install my cleats all the way backward. So I have to compensate somehow, because otherwise I'm just not having my knee in the right position. So it's counterintuitive, but if you move your cleats back, you're actually moving your foot in front of your knee. And that makes my knee hurt. So yeah, there's definitely a too slack. Other than that, on the single speed, the saddle is only to lean the bike to the wall, really. The saddle is, it's nice to have it, but when you really need to put down some serious power, you won't be seated.
For sure. Which actually brings me to kind of another topic. And I've recently gone through the experience of racing some multi-day events on the hardtail. And of course, most people came up to me and, are you crazy? How can you do this? This is so hard. Why would you do this on a hardtail? And it's like, well, you know, it's actually fine as long as I'm standing. It's the only problem really is when you sit for a long time and you're going over flattish terrain with a lot of bumps in it, like small chattery bumps that really come through on your back when you're riding, and certainly at my advanced age. And so it's kind of the interesting angle is like the function of your legs in terms of not only with pedaling and suspension, but also how you stabilize yourself on the bike. And I think that's where this whole complex of C-tube angle, where is your saddle when you're riding, how you stand on the bike, in relation to all the different contact points, feet, you mentioned it, hands, the other, is kind of the important thing that is makes a hardtail so attractive to be riding, because you don't have to think about where all the other things moving. It's just
that's one of the things.
The triangle is stable.
Yeah, I think I've also mentioned that in my initial reply, that like everyone is talking about that C angle, and they're like, yeah, now it's called slack if you have a 74 degree seat angle on a hardtail, because your full suspension bike maybe has 76 degrees, but as soon as you sit down, you're actually slacker. And if you move uphill, it's actually even worse because all your weight is on the back. And it moves back and forth as soon as you pedal up some rooty bits. So yeah, it's also, I've read a lot about it, and I know how theoretically C-tube angles are measured, but I can't really make sense of it. Like, it's so random. You really need to know at what height they are measured, and some brands do actually claim that, but most don't. So I think a comparison is really difficult.
Oh, and no, you need to do it. If you want to be accurate, you need to do it yourself. Put your bike bike on next to a wall, take a photo, and then get some 3D software or something where you can actually measure the effective seat tube angle at your specific saddle height, right? Because my example, I'm the flip side of your body shape. I have very long legs and a shorter torso, relatively speaking. I have my saddle at about 80 centimeters from the bottom bracket. So that is a very different discussion depending on the C-tube angle.
Like
the actual angle of the C-tube where you're going to sit in relation to the bottom bracket and the rear axle, as it may be. And so that's why if you want to do that real exercise really accurate, then you should be measuring your saddle position relative to the bottom bracket and using those measurements.
Yeah, because for my size, usually the saddle rails are long enough to compensate for it. Like, it's, you're talking about 1 or 2 degrees mostly. So it's not like 5 centimeters in the end, or maybe it is, but that's almost what you can make up for. It's probably 2. But for me, it's not something to look at. In the worst case, I get a different crank length and my knee is going to be in the right position again. So it's like, yeah, if that's one of the benefits of not being too tall, I guess.
True. What would make you buy a full suspension bike again?
Not marketing, because I think that's terrible. It's one of the main reasons I'm also kind of distancing myself with stupid projects like that. At the moment, I'm actually thinking about getting one, but probably not next season. Probably I'll do at least one more season of hardtail only. Actually, the trails around here, and funnily, not the steep ones, but more the all-day Jura grinding days where you're constantly riding over rocks. So for content, I live in Basel, so you can just climb up the next hill and you're in the middle of Jura Mountains where it's just rocks everywhere. And like I said before, sitting down on a hardtail and pedaling for a long distance, that's actually where it gets annoying. As long as it's steep and techy, it's not that bad because you got all the weight on the front anyway. But if you want to carry momentum over those ridge lines, and can get a bit more tiring than it should be. So I'm sure I could do longer or also more longer rides on a full suspension bike. So that would be one of the main reasons. Maybe just the need for speed again. Like, the hardtail prevents you from doing stupid things. You only do things you know you can do, because you're the only one that can save you, and you don't have some magic squish that kind of makes up for bad decisions. So
yeah, but that's part of the fun.
You're older than me, you have to know.
Yeah, no, I, you know, again, you know, as you say, I'm older than you, but I still think it's quite entertaining sometimes.
Yeah, it depends on the size of the size of the features you want to hit. Yeah, so the bigger features probably.
But joking aside, I mean, of course, I guess in summary of all the things that we've already said before, right? So it's kind of like my personal opinion is like if just because you're not running rear suspension, if you have your fork properly set up, you have the cheapest feature on any bike is good geometry. If you have your geometry, you're happy with that. That's where your perfect balance between your contact points, between your wheels, you know, there's all the different things are in the right place. In my mind, there is not much that holds you back. I mean, the same rider compared to a full suspension bike. For myself, I know that there's obviously some trails that on a hardtail you will never be as fast as on a full suspension downhill bike or something else, or a big enduro bike. But at the end of the day, that doesn't really matter to me anyway. But if I want to go for here my local trails around Zurich, then some of the fastest times are on my hardtail and not on my enduro race bike.
Yeah, also my fastest time on the local flow trail was on the hardtail, and by quite a measure, like I think like 20 seconds faster over 5 minutes. It has a climb on it, but I think that's not the reason. So yeah, and also as the longer I ride the hardtail, the closer I get to the speed I had on the full suspension bike. It's just your margin of error is small. Like, I think to ride a hardtail fast, you just need to know what you're doing. You won't ride out of your ability. You just ride within your limits. And on a full suspension bike, you sometimes might get away with stretching those limits a little bit. So, but if you know what you're doing, you can carry so much speed out of a berm, or like for some gaps you even need a bit less speed because you won't lose some of your momentum when pushing down. And for other parts, what I've learned in the bike parks is braking bumps, for example, it's just something you just won't be at the same speed as the full suspension rider because it just slows you down, just can't do anything about it. But yeah, I'm with you on that.
Well, the last time I saw you riding in a bike park, I saw you also riding with Anna Newkirk. So don't be too hard on yourself for not keeping up with a World Cup downhill racer.
I think the first two or three laps I did, but then I got tired. she started to get into it. It was tough, but it was great fun. Things probably she's one of the reasons I might have to get a full suspension bike again, because she keeps getting faster and I keep getting slower. So yeah,
there you go.
I need something.
Some free speed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, but if you had to choose, never ride suspension again or never ride gearing again, what would you choose?
I miss the gearing a bit more, to be honest. So yeah, I could live without suspension, but at some point I need to have gears again, especially if I want to keep riding when I'm 50. Because if I had some tough weeks where I've been pushing it, I do definitely feel it in my knees.
You made some really good points. But I can't help but think that there are going to be some shredders out there on their full suspension bikes who are going to listen to this and be like, no, I don't believe him. What would you say to that? Like, they simply just don't believe you.
The first thing is, of course, I'm playing a bit of a devil's advocate. I mean, I've raced downhill and I'd never do it on a hardtail and I'd never be at the same speed. But at the same time, I won't have more fun on a full suspension bike, so I think the riding is the same. And on the other hand, I know so many people that have never ridden a proper hardtail. If they hear hardtail, they think about their first cheap mountain bike that just, didn't work. I think most people would be surprised how easy it is to ride a good hardtail, because that's my key point, really. I think riding a hardtail is easy, and it's easier to reach your own potential limit on the hardtail than it is to reach it on a full suspension bike. So why would anyone buy a Mini Cooper and not just go for a Ferrari or a BMW? I mean, if money wouldn't be a thing, which is the other point, hardtail is way, way cheaper. But everyone agrees that a Mini Cooper is a fun car, but no one would say that it's faster than a Porsche or so. Like, yeah, for me, that's the reason. It's pure, and the fun is sometimes even better because you don't have to go as fast to be on the limit.
I'm glad you went there with the topic of potential, because I was trying to put together all of the pieces of this conversation. And it, you know, you're obviously experienced when it comes to riding fast. You're very experienced when it comes to bike setup, and also you're a mechanic. You're intimately knowledgeable with suspension, of course, being with Fox for some time. And so, you know, when you put all these things together, it's kind of like when you consider all of the experiences that you've gone through, it's not hard to see why you are trying to use a hardtail in this situation, because you are trying to explore. If I'm willing to bet, you're willing to explore your potential as a rider, not as like a combination of rider and bike. And so when you limit yourself by using a hardtail, you can actually feel as if you're not limiting yourself because you're exploring that deeper potential.
Yes.
Where would I be?
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much it. It just feels, you feel way more connected and somehow also more in control, because I kind of understand what's going on. So I got immediate feedback through the rear wheel. I just have to pick my lines. And if I don't have the traction on the rear wheel to correct it, or I just don't have the body strength to sometimes make it out of a turn. If I entered it in the wrong angle, it just collapse, and there's nothing that saves you. And that's pretty much what makes it. I have to, the riding, the experience I have now in riding is way more pure. Like, I have to be so focused all the time. My legs are what would give me the suspension. It's what gives me the geometry changes I want. Like, I can move the center of gravity on the bike by moving my body weight, and it's not the wheels moving under me. So I have to do everything, and I'm responsible for it. And on a full suspension bike, I feel like I give some of that away to the shock. Yeah, it feels like 10 or 20% of what's happening is, it's actually what the engineers did and not what I did.
I'm also willing to bet you probably prefer to drive a 5-speed or manual transmission car rather than a automatic.
Yeah, like my wife and I, we own a 2005 John Cooper Works Mini, so I'd never give that thing away. It's not the fastest, but it doesn't have to be. Like, it's just a stupid little car, and it resembles my bike a bit. Yeah, I like it.
Simple thrills. Yeah, this is an element of fun, right?
Yeah, I think simplicity, and that's one of the things. Like, if I try to make notes about what happens on a full suspension bike when you are riding a berm, it's just a couple, like, basically it's almost 2 pages. When front compresses, what that means, that's the same thing on, like, on a hardtail, but that's where it ends on the hardtail. Like, in the end, the fork expands again, and you reverse those steps, but you don't have change in chainstay length and all those things that, like, it's so complex. And of course, you're not thinking about it when riding, but you do somehow counteract those movements. So there's so much going on. Like, if you just think about what the weight distribution, how it changes when the shock extends when you're slowing down, or if the rear wheel starts to move up and down and like everything, and you're always counteracting those movements. So it takes away from that pure feeling of just you on that trail. It's just so much noise, really.
I was going to make that comment. It's like a lot of noise, like a lot of static.
Yeah, yeah.
So you cut off half of the sensors and you get a little bit of a more pure signal.
Yeah, yeah. That's pretty much how I describe it, yeah. One of the things that I always hear is like, why are you riding a hardtail? And I was like, yeah, why don't you? Like, you're basically spending 5 times the money I did for my frame just to make sure you don't feel as much of the trail you're riding. Like, we go out there to feel what we're doing, right? So this doesn't make sense to you. I wouldn't go to cinema blindfolded. Like, you want to feel what's going on, right?
Actually, I always, when I get that question as well, and I always think of it as a rhetorical question, because what I understand from that is they're asking, not me, but they're asking themselves, why don't I ride a hardtail? Why don't I have single speed? Why aren't I riding with pins only in one side of my pedal? And, you know, it's, that's how I go about it. I mean, it's, I don't really think of it as a direct question to me. More people should ride hardtails. It's fun.
Yeah, I think to reconnect a bit, and also to, I mean, you can't, chances that you're not riding the best bike for you possible in the world is, it's pretty big. Like, chances are that their bikes could be much, much better if they wouldn't have to be within categories, or like if, whatever. I'm not going to deep into the business side of things now, because there has to be reasons why things are done like they're done, even though I don't always understand. But why even try? Like, it's not going to be the best thing anyway. So you could just make it simple and pure, and that's it. Yeah, that's absolutely.
When I think about a mountain bike, what is a mountain bike? I've thought about it a lot, and I've distilled it down as to a vehicle, a two-wheeled vehicle that's capable of holding or having treaded tires, because the tread is what really sets it apart from every other type of bicycle. I think that's my opinion, and that's like what I would consider the purest answer for a mountain bike.
So slope stylers are not riding mountain bikes?
In some cases, not.
Okay.
But so, okay. Let's dig a little bit further. So what's your take on that? Because I also want to know where you consider the tire setup in terms of a hardtail, because I think it's a very important part of a hardtail setup.
I think tires are not only a very important thing about a hardtail. I think it determines pretty much where that bike is going to be ridden, in the best case, or other way around. But I agree on that, that without knobby tires, it's probably not a mountain bike. I agree on that. On a hardtail tire setup, you're always in a bit of a tough spot, because you need the tires for suspension. And on the other hand, you need them to be tough, because especially on the rear wheel, you'll have so many rim strikes and other mishaps, and all the force goes straight through the tires. I think that's one topic. And the other thing, I go back on that later, what is a mountain bike? I thought about this a lot with the upcoming of those SUV e-bikes, because for me, they're not mountain bikes, even though they got like threaded tires, but they're just terrible bikes to do a hiker bike as well, for example. So for me, a mountain bike is basically a bike that you'd happily take to the mountains. Like, you'd actually carry it up a mountain if needed, because you could get a benefit out of it. If it's not worth to carry it on your back on top of a mountain, then there isn't a reason it should be there in the first place. Like, yeah, I'd never consider a 30 kilo e-bike a mountain bike because it's just a very bad motorcycle. But yeah, that's an opinion as well. But I thought about that a lot in the last couple of years. So at some point, even a badass gravel bike can be a mountain bike to me. Like if you take it to the mountains and you feel like you're on the right spot with it, it's a mountain bike.
Well, I mean, the cynical view of gravel bikes is that it's just, you know, time machine it back 30 years and you arrive at what mountain bikes used to be at the time.
that's a fun thing. If people that own a very badass full suspension bike and a gravel bike ask you why you ride a hardtail.
Oh, yeah, that's...
And you're like...
The irony of that situation.
Yeah, it's just... But that's what I mean with fitting into a category and just marketing, social media, all that peer group pressure. Single speed hardtail rigged bike is fine as soon as you put drop bars on it. And if not, you're just a crazy guy. I think, yeah, it's very random.
So we've talked about what a mountain bike is and what we mean with a mountain bike. But I mean, I think what I'm hearing is that the mountain bike is much more for you. It's not only just the thing that you do ride around the forest. You do much more with it. And I follow you obviously on social media, and I saw a couple of your photos from a recent riding trip. And maybe you can elaborate a little bit on what else you do with your bike that you know, obviously also drive your choices that you've made since you started this project with the single speed mountain bike.
Yeah, exactly. So I've mentioned before that when I've started that project, it was during Corona, I was bored. And I thought, what do I lack in terms of bike? And that was when the hardtail started. And I saw a lot of potential. One of it was bike packing as well. Like not only, I was intrigued by the idea to have one bike that doesn't need any maintenance that I can take everywhere. So from bike parks to, and that's the other extreme, bike packing. So I think that's one thing that you can only accomplish on a hardtail that easily. My dad followed me on that trip on a full suspension bike, and it was harder for him to get all the stuff on the bike than for me, for example.
For him, it must have been easy, right? Because he had a mechanic with him.
yeah, but we didn't have a single mechanical. That's a good thing. What we did, I can kind of give a bit of a context. I got married this year. My wife is Bavarian, so I've been to the very east of the Bavarian forest where her family is from. And it's a very interesting area. There is one of the biggest natural forests still existing in Europe, which is basically untouched. And it's also the Czech-German border was part of the Iron Curtain. So when I've been there, I've did a lot of hiking with my dog, and I've always seen interesting things, and the area is like, it's really big. So I wanted to explore that. And yeah, that's when the plan grew to do a bikepacking trip. First, I got to admit, I've never done any multi-day bikepacking before. I just went on Komoot and started putting together a round trip. We did end up being in hotels most nights. It was also quite interesting to see the differences there, but it was a pretty good trip. But I have no experience how long should be a one-day trip and how many vertical meters can you do, like on the seventh day on a single-speed bike with added weight. There was a lot of excitement when we started. the little bit of context, my dad joined me as well. He got retired just a few months before that trip, and he was getting back to shape. He did marathon and triathlon previously, so yeah, even though he's
fit,
yeah, he was fit, and I felt like I have to be gentle on him. And I planned a 7-day trip where we did 60 to 80 kilometers a day with about 1,600 to 2,000 meter of climbing a day. Like, the idea was to do a mountain bikepacking trip. So we always, if there were trails in the area, we took them. So we didn't just go from A to B. We went pretty much zigzag. You can imagine between the German and Czech border, there's basically a pretty high ridge line. So we climbed that ridge like twice a day when we moved from one side to the other of those valleys. So a lot of trails, almost no on-road riding. We installed Maxxis Minion tires in the front and a double down aggressor in the back, because that was the best compromise between rolling speed and ability to still ride the trails there, because I knew from hiking that there were pretty gnarly trails. So yeah, that was kind of the setup for the whole trip. And it turned out, like, I go more into details in a hobby, but it turned out that my dad was not the problem. He was 64 years old, like double my age, but he had gears and a full suspension bike, and he was fit. And I was riding my single speed 29er. I got a 34 teeth chainring on the front, 20 teeth in the back. Because that was I'm riding around here, because that was the lightest gear I could still pedal out of the turns to hit some jumps around here. So I did change that, but it just added a lot of weight, like basically everything I needed for 1 week of riding, which kind of made it feel a little bit harder. And yeah, that's how we went on. Like, we started at the at my wife's uncle's house, and that was as much preparation as we basically had. I didn't, like, my clothing I packed except from riding clothing was a part of swimming shorts, a tank top, and flip-flops, because it was like July. But I didn't check the average weather in the Bavarian forest in July. I mean, it was in early June. If I did that, I would have known that it won't be much more than 20 degrees. But yeah, that was how well prepared. Yeah, that was how well prepared we were. Like I was. Yeah, it was interesting. Also to see the difference between the German and the Czech side of the border, and also all the, it's really well made around along the Iron Curtain. There's like so many info posts where you could read, like we were reading for a couple of hours a day, I guess, just to kind of soak up all that atmosphere. Was I don't even know how to start. I did some preparation, but now I'm a bit lost, because there was so much going on. You had the riding on one side, which was insane. There were parts, like, we didn't ride on any area that was not allowed to ride. So that was, even if Komoot would let us through a forbidden trail, we wouldn't ride it, because it's one of the last untouched areas in Europe. So we did respect that. But still, there were so many trails that were barely, they're not even walked that often. Like, it's just awesome riding. Even though with all that added weight, of course, you weren't like shredding because you were traveling, but the peacefulness of those forests was amazing. And then you had every other hour you had one of those memorials where you had like, yeah, there used to be a town here, or this is where the Iron Curtain went through, and you just saw, like, you still could see all the destruction, and was especially what was going on at that time, or still is going on in Ukraine, where it all kind of lifts up again. I was a bit overwhelmed. It's still hard to put it into perspective, and like, yeah, through family, you have a connection to this area that has suffered until just a couple of decades ago. Still struggling a bit to put it into words, to the atmosphere that you get into traveling by your bicycle. It's very quiet. You can see a lot, but you're still getting pretty long distance in one day. So there's much to... you try to ask many questions about the area. So we did basically, I should have said in the beginning, but we did basically a round trip around the Bavarian and Sumava forest, which is that big nature reservoir. Very interesting area, yeah. I didn't know anything about the Czech side of the border before. Like, I didn't have time to read into it, or we did all on the way. Every evening we spend hours on Wikipedia and recapping what we've seen that day. Yeah. I think that's one of those things that I think bikes can give us as well, like those experiences.
Yeah. The little freedom machine.
Yeah.
To explore the world.
Exactly.
I got a lot of great imagery from your tale about your trans bike pack duro, but did you encounter anybody? It sounds like it was pretty remote, other than the hotels. I mean, like, did you see anybody on the trails or in the forest?
There was one spot, I forgot the name of it, that was pretty well known, where you look at like those stone formations on top of a mountain. It looks like you're somewhere in Canada. Very, very beautiful. There were a few people. But apart from that, like on the Czech side of the border, there were many bike paths, like mainly for e-bikes and just commuters. And there were cafes every now and there. So we went back on those roads where there were like tons of people. But because we were zigzagging all the time, as soon as we went off those main roads, like there weren't many roads through that forest, of course, there were only bike paths. And they were used like roads because there were so many bicycles. But as soon as you strayed off the path, yeah, we were pretty much on our own all day battling. It was raining pretty much all the time. And but it was, I think it added to the experience. I just wished I should have brought all the shoes and my flip-flops.
Well, you made it through. And it's a very inspiring story, actually. I'm going to start looking up. Maybe you can share your Komoot route with me, because I'm going to take a look at that area as well.
At one point, we even went down one of the Czech Enduro Championship stages. So there was one drop I didn't do with all the bike packing, but it's the only part on the trail where I had to get off the bike. Yeah,
there would have been a different kind of yard sale.
Yeah, I was like...
Packing gear everywhere.
I was simply not convinced that I would be strong enough to survive the impact, because I had most of my weight on my shoulders, because I didn't have enough money to buy all the fancy bikepacking gear you could have. So I just filled my front triangle and the rest was on my back.
All right. Well, we do get towards the end of our time tonight. So I think we want to move over to our closeout questions, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, our first question is, we ask our guests about the first bike that got them really stoked on riding.
That was one of those shitty hardtails I mentioned earlier. When I was a kid, my dad gave me one of those, I'd call it dirt jump replicas. Like, the frame looked very aggressive, very low slung, which is one of those things I adore most about hardtails. Just that straight line. I still have that frame in my mind, just straight line from top tube to this to the rear wheel. But it was like, of course, I loved it. I've ridden it every minute, and it lasted 5 months. But the damage was done. I then went on to destroy my dad's bike, and I was only like 12 years old. And that's when he decided that I needed a Kona Stinky. Yeah. So it was a Crosswave Rock Hopper, that first bike. And then the first proper mountain bike, I think, was a Kona Stinky, the original one with the military green one.
Oh, nice. Classic. With our second question, we ask our guests to imagine themselves as a bike magician extraordinaire by the name of Harry Schedini. And with your magic dropper post, you can make riding a bike for anyone more awesome. What would you do?
I'd make anyone care less about anything else than just themselves and their riding. Like, not even about their bike, just their riding. So that not only when you're on your bike, most people are in the moment. But as soon as you get off, it's all that peer pressure. You need to have the right bike, the right equipment, and all that. I just tried to get rid of that and just make people ride their bikes again. The best mountain biker is just someone that's happy riding his bike.
Word up.
So, bike pack, trans bike pack, Duro, Bavaria, Czech Republic. Okay, you probably are up on some pretty gnarly trails there. Did you happen to slash any skids? And if you did,
yeah, I think.
Tell me about it.
My favorite part was it was raining, like I said, like most of the time, and there was a very steep chute down to a river, and there was a left-hander leading onto a wooden bridge in the rain. And I approached it way too fast, put out a foot, and kind of made it on the bridge. But as I said, it was wooden. And what I've seen then was that it was gone. Like, it was destroyed. So I pretty much skidded on my back into a river. That was the best part. Because I then had, of course, I was riding my carbon cross-country shoes. So I had to climb back out of that river on those slippery rocks with the loaded bike on my back on carbon shoes. Which was, like, I wasn't very lucky with shoe choice on that trip. But yeah, that was one of the most memorable skits of my life, I guess.
I like it. Approved.
Approved. All right. Well, I guess with that, we get towards closing out the show. Jan, thank you very much for your time. This was really, really cool and great to catch up. Listeners have any questions about geometry, the appropriate bottom bracket height, where can they find you? Where can they reach you?
I'm on Instagram, of course. What's my name at the moment? Too Hairy Chase? Yeah, Too Hairy Chase, because me and my dog are both Chase. I'm Jan, she's Jaspis. And it's basically my dog's Instagram. So if you only see dogs, that just means that I didn't have time to post bike stuff. But that's me.
There you go. Sweet. We'll put that into the show notes so people can check out the dog life of a single speed rider. All right. With that, thank you again. That is really cool, and I hope to see you soon.
Thank
on
you.
On our hardtails.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks for listening. We really hope you enjoyed this episode.
Pascal and I put a lot of heart and soul into this podcast, and it means a lot to us that you've listened to it. We'd also really appreciate if you shared it with the people that you know and care about. Until next time, Skigglers.